I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. Today in 1961, Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first human to travel to outer space. But today, the talk in Washington and NATO nation elites is not about space exploration so much as expanding wars here on Earth to wars in space, all while 95 million across Western Europe may not be able to eat dinner tonight. The fashionable talk among NATO elites concerns laser weapons. That is despite a whistleblower, the first in the US Government Accountability Office's history, exposing multi-billion dollar corruption at the heart of US laser weapon programs. Joining me now from Boston, Massachusetts, is that whistleblower, a researcher of science, technology and society at MIT and a specially appointed professor at the Tokyo Institute of Technology, Professor Subrata Ghoshroi. Professor Ghoshroi, thanks so much for coming on. Of course, terrible news about restarted wars in West Asia, albeit there is optimism in Europe and optimism about missile defense treaties, the START and INF. Finally, something might happen after the dark years of Biden-Harris. But they're investing in laser weapons. What exactly are laser weapons, and why is so much public money from NATO European countries and the United States going into them?
I think the laser weapons are symptomatic of this synergistic connection of the whole military-industrial complex between Europe and the United States, and at a very pivotal point is Israel. As you mentioned that. I'm a whistleblower for weapons that are were being discussed and researched and so forth in the United States with lasers. But specifically, I've blown whistle on all these things. But the thing that got publicity in 2006 was my going public on my investigation, not on a laser weapon, but a so-called conventional missile defense system that the U.S. was building. It was in the very early stages. But altogether, the whistleblowing and bringing to the public's view the corruption in the military-industrial complex and missile defense in particular. But to your question about laser weapons, so lasers were invented back in the early 60s. In fact, the weapons lasers were primarily gas lasers, meaning with hydrogen or carbon dioxide or some other gases. And so I was working back then in the early 70s and late 70s and early 80s on gas lasers. And now you mentioned that they're talking about laser weapons in Europe, and there's a British company that is supposedly developing these anti-drone lasers. And these are much less powerful lasers than the lasers that I was working on as part of the R&D program of the Pentagon. And these didn't go anywhere at all. And so now there are some low power lasers that cannot do like take down a missile or something, but can potentially blind electronics guidance systems in aircraft and laser in the drones and so forth. So this particular thing in England, and I don't know a whole lot about it, but I was interviewed by Wall Street Journal about maybe several months ago, and they actually did not mention anything about this weapon. So I talked broadly about laser weapons that I was familiar with, except for this solid state laser, which I personally didn't work on as a technical person, but know someone. And there are still many, many problems before these lasers can be fielded in the battlefield.
Yeah, just on that, I know the British are talking about sending troops to kill Russians in Ukraine, yeah. And simultaneously they're talking about this great laser weapon, $13 a laser shot. I mean, the media in my country, in Britain, of course, is often propaganda media in any case. They just take press releases from the British Ministry of Defence. But I understand previously a smudge on the lens of the laser would render the whole laser gun, I mean, it would target the wrong thing because of a smudge on the lens.
Yes, and you bring up the laser gun, I mean the lens, and that's a very interesting thing because when I brought to life the light the problem with the airborne laser, which was a very expensive research program that, and I was in Congress actually then as a scientific staffer on the House National Security Committee, and we had jurisdiction over looking at this laser, so I did, and wrote a report saying that this should not be funded. Of course, lo and behold, it got funded for another 6 years after I left Congress, and eventually in 2009, it was canceled. And one of the basic problems, first of all, the laser was supposed to be on an airborne platform, which was a Boeing 747. Now, everybody knows Boeing 747 flies, and it did pretty well in its lifetime, but the laser didn't. And so when they bought the airplane from Boeing very quickly to try to integrate the laser, it didn't work. And one of the problems they faced was the lens for the laser, where the output beam was going to go to the front of the turret of the airplane. And in the United States, we didn't have enough machining capacity in terms of machining this huge sapphire window that needed to be polished very, very carefully, and little smudge or anything, any blemish on the window would send the laser beam astray. And that particular window had to be polished in Germany by Bosch, and they bought two, and I think one of them had problems, and anyway, the program died.
Well, I mean, just the scale, I don't know whether Elon Musk has rung you for the Department of Government Efficiency yet, because I mean, the scale of fraud we're talking about that you were involved in uncovering, I mean, this is a $26 billion system at that time expected to cost more than $250 billion. I don't know whether you want to tell me about the infrastructure in, are you in Boston? And the yes. much needed investment required in your country, in the United States, of bridges, let alone healthcare. Why is it so expensive? People were taking money off of this.
Yes, well, absolutely. I'll give you an example. Just I was reading up a little bit this morning about the current debates, supposed whatever debates in Congress. There's no debates. The defense budget comes to Congress and it gets approved routinely. Not only gets the amount of the money that the president requests, let's say $900 billion this year plus, and the Congress will add to it another $50 billion because that money could go back to the districts as earmarks and so forth. So one interesting that's going on, and I pointed this out a long time ago when I was writing about this, the corruption in the missile defense system, is that you will notice there is a U.S. Missile Defense Agency that whose job is to research and develop missile defense system, not to operate them in the field. But the fact is, these systems don't work. So they don't want military services to get hold of these systems independently of the Missile Defense Agency. And that's a battle that's going on now. There is a system called THAAD. THAAD, Theater High Altitude Area Defense System. There is one in South Korea that is a big consternation to China, one in Israel, one in Saudi Arabia. And now the Department of Defense wants this system to come out of the agency's jurisdiction into the Army, the Armed Services, or the U.S. Army, and there's a huge resistance from this agency, because now once you turn it over to the military, you can just tweak it all the time to get it running or whatever running means. So the whole thing will come out and they will dump the system. And this is precisely what the agency is saying. So the corruption, it's all a money-making business. And there's a huge lobby, as you know, like the Israel lobby, APAC, there's a missile defense lobby that keeps the members of Congress very much in check with money and so forth. So there is no oversight whatsoever. And my whistleblowing went nowhere.
I'll get into the Israel thing in a second. Just for you personally, Because we don't, I mean, we had Chuck Spinney on, the legendary Pentagon whistleblower, yep. who told the world about what was going on back then. What happened to you personally when you decided to make this decision to come clean for the American public?
Yes, well, Chuck Spinney, he's a part of Pentagon. He didn't blow a whistle or anything like that, but he came out. And so he didn't suffer any real problems with the department, as far as I can tell. But for people like me, I had a little bit of a disadvantage because I was not born in the United States. I was born in India. And I had grown up in India and then came to go to grad school and then eventually stayed in the United States. And so I had very high level clearances because otherwise I couldn't do this job. And I had worked with another congressman, Congressman Howard Berman, and his chief of staff, Bob Blumenfeld. Howard Berman is a mainstream pro-Israel congressman from Los Angeles. But he was an outlier in terms of this efficiency in the government business that he would bring to light the corruption charges, etc., which I was doing. So he was sponsoring, in a way, my work, even though I was officially employed by the U.S. Government Accountability Office, the GAO. We worked under the jurisdiction of Congress. So Howard Berman had requested this work. And I had worked very closely for 4 years with his staff as I was reviewing all this material, secret material in secret rooms and so forth. Eventually, when I decided to blow the whistle because GAO would not publish the results of my investigation, and there was enormous pressure from the Pentagon and the Republican members of Congress on GAO not to go public, and I think that's what did it. I was very careful that I did not do anything that could be construed as illegal, especially there was so much classified material I had to handle. And I got assurance from Congressman Berman's staff that they would intervene in the case if there was a retaliatory action on me from the government, from the GAO. So I think Congressman Berman wrote a very strong letter to GAO not to fire me. Well, I was not fired, that is correct, but my life was made pretty miserable, so I had to leave.
Professor Subrata Ghoshrai, I'll stop you there. More from the US Government Accountability Office whistleblower and MIT researcher after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the US Government Accountability Office whistleblower and researcher at MIT, Professor Subrata Ghoshrai. Professor Ghoshrai, you were talking about blowing the whistle to help the American people and the get the taxes spent properly. What did actually happen to you? You said you weren't fired, you were protected. All you were doing was actually in the interest of the American people. How was your life made worse?
Well, I mean that's the story of the defense spending and the political support for defense programs and the influence of the lobby. So even though there was a so-called congressional oversight of the Department of Defense in terms of finding out what's going on, and people like me who are on the staff would be going to visit the Pentagon and going to visit contractors and all the stuff and get the data. But ultimately, nothing really happened. So there is this facade, so to speak, of a debate on the defense budget and big publicity about certain things. And there was a lot of press articles, of course, leading up to my investigation, then also after I went public. That kind of publicity was there, but the pressure on congressmen to do something about it was minimal. And the way the public debate and the interests of public, so to speak, are controlled is that you create jobs in districts everywhere. So let me give you an example. Let's say the Airborne Laser, which was the Boeing was a principal contractor. They had placed staff on the who are working on this project almost in the 50 states of the United States. So anytime there is some pressure from outside, hey, this thing doesn't work, it should be canceled, etc., Boeing goes to town with big advertisements and so forth, and they organize the people who work on these projects to take a very active part in putting pressure on congressmen not to cut the budget. So it's very difficult for congressmen also, and they are already somewhat compromised because they obtain or accept contributions from the military contractors. So ultimately, there nothing really happens. Very few cases where, well, programs do get canceled, and military does on its own cancel program because it becomes outlandish things happen in these programs, and they cancel all the time after spending enormous amounts of money. And there's no accountability. Why did you run this program for 5 years when somebody like myself had warned Congress in memo 5 years prior to the cancellation that this thing is not going to go anywhere, we shouldn't fund it, and we funded it, and then it just goes its way.
So yeah, I'll go a bit more into that in a second with as regards the new Pentagon boss, Pete Hegseth. But I mean, I actually asked the Raytheon director for Middle East here 26 years ago at the largest arms fair of the 20th century held in Abu Dhabi. I asked the Raytheon guy, does the Iron Dome work? Do Patriot missiles work? I mean, what is your understanding about Israel's Iron Dome? Does it actually work? I know that the previous Pentagon boss under Biden Harris, Lloyd Austin, was a director of Raytheon. Does it work?
Yeah, that's right. There is some technology in terms of stopping short-range missiles. So Russia has a very powerful system, that the S-400 and the S-500s, they really work. And the air defense system there, air defense and missile defense systems, they can stop a shorter range, meaning lower speed missiles or rockets. And so
everyone talks about the Russian ones. Why are the Russian ones better than the American ones when the American ones would cost far more money, much more money?
Yeah, Donald Trump has one thing right. I mean, the return on investment on the wars and stuff is pretty poor. I mean, he's a businessman, so he kind of looks at the return on investment. So the return on investment is pretty poor. You can't measure this system's efficiency by seeing how much money is spent on these things. And the Russians, just look at the Russian budget. So the U.S. budget is approaching or exceeding now $1 trillion. The old saying was, in a million here, a million there, now you're talking serious money. Well, this ain't so anymore. I mean, now the defense budget is reaching the $1 trillion mark. One country, $1 trillion mark. And Russian budget, just until before the Ukraine war, was only like $50 or $60 billion. It's only recently, because of the war spending, has gone up to close to $80 or $90 billion, but 10 to 1. And yet, the whole NATO, with all their armaments, all their air defense systems and everything, cannot win over a country that's spending a nothing amount. So there is the answer. So the US military is a big, it's a cash cow, and it's it just spends because it's such a big organization. The GAO, which does many things right, I of course worked there, and they said Pentagon's books are not auditable, and yet there is people just shrug and go on with their own business. But you can't audit this $1 trillion. You couldn't audit what we spent in Afghanistan, what we spent in Iraq.
But Pete Hegseth, of course, says it will be audited. So it just failed its seventh audit. So do you expect Hegseth to very quickly go, look, we're working on that, and again it being kicked into the long grass?
Yeah, right. Basically that.
Meanwhile, Trump, who, as you say, is interested in rate of return and so on, and is trying to seek peace in Europe whilst funding, obviously, the genocide in Gaza and wars in West Asia, he's obsessed by something called the Golden Dome system, which would be 400 times bigger than the Israeli Iron Dome, which we don't really know whether it works. Journalists just write down what the Israeli Ministry of Defense says and says, yes, this, it worked. And it's even though we can see some projectiles launched at Israel landing. What do you make of the executive order signed on 27th of January by President Trump about for a Golden Dome system?
My feeling is, I mean, that Trump, I mean, he's full of contradictions, but I think that he does represent a certain section of the Republican right, which has missile defense as their mantra. And this is the same Republican right that introduced missile defense in a big way in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan did the Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative. So that lobby did not disappear. I mean, I was in Congress working on the staff from 1996 to 98 and almost 99, and I worked intimately on these topics for both the House International Relations Committee for Congressman Lee Hamilton and then Congressman Ron Dellums in the House Armed Services Committee. So I was very intimately familiar with these debates in the House on the missile defense. And when Newt Gingrich came in 95, just before I arrived there, and their election manifesto, so to speak, had this issue about missile defense, that we will deploy a missile defense system, which George Bush basically did, come hell or high water. The missile defense doesn't work, doesn't matter. Rumsfeld just said it didn't matter if it works or not. We got to try something. And so the missile defense was done like that in 1995. And then Bill Clinton caved to the Republicans and gave it in terms of the withdrawal to the from the ABM treaty in 2000 by Bush. The path was set for missile defense. So there is this almost like a cult-like thing on missile defense that was based in Lawrence Livermore lab with scientists who are equally cult-like and didn't think about physics, but thought about this, that we have to have this shield. So he's bringing back, Ronald Reagan is just bringing back the whole thing about even the right-wingers within Reagan's coalition that was pushing for the space-based system. So, I mean, he doesn't know anything, but he's just repeating talking points from wherever he's getting it from.
But it's your understanding that, I mean, in Trump's first term, it was notable how he quickly, after being told what the threats to the United States were, wanted to talk to Kim Jong-un, and people were wondering why. Is that because it's their understanding that North Korea could destroy Los Angeles in a matter of 30 minutes, and therefore, rather than seeking peace, the military-industrial complex would immediately say, oh, well, what we need is a Golden Dome to protect us from North Korea?
Right. And right now, so yes, he was trying to make peace with Kim Jong-un and was until derailed by Bolton. But in this case, now that with the Golden Dome, I mean, he wants to make peace with Putin. And, you know, one of the basic things between Russia and the United States is the missile defense system. In fact, this is why the disarmament that was proposed by actually Reagan and Gorbachev in their summit in Reykjavik, that we should just get rid of all nuclear weapons. And the thing that got stuck there was the Reagan's pursuit of missile defense. So by pursuing Golden Dome, this so-called shield, the Strategic Defense Initiative was trying to build, I actually am not paying too much attention to this anymore because it's ridiculous. It's not going to work. It's going to have so much money in it. So the money will be spent, a good amount of money will be spent. Defense contractors will get rich, and this lobby will get rich, and Trump can talk about this Golden Dome, which will please his Israeli counterparts and the Israeli military companies like Elbit and others. And beyond that, it doesn't mean a whole hell of a lot.
Just finally,
he wants to.
Just finally, Professor, how important is it as part of this to hide all this information from the general public so that, the military must be involved in journalism on ABC News, CBS, CNN, BBC. How important is that as part of this attempt at trying to make a few people very rich at the expense of the American public and at NATO populations' publics?
That just goes without saying that the basic thing about this great land of democracy is to keep information from going out to public. And they're doing everything possible to keep these truths from, they're complicated because they're technical in many ways, so that makes it easy, and it's very easy to classify them. When I blew the whistle right before that, a woman named Dr. Nira Schwartz, she was an Israeli citizen, a mathematician, had worked at Hughes Aircraft, who had originally blown the whistle on the missile defense program for something else. And they just went after her. And Paul Wolfowitz, who was then the Deputy Secretary of Defense at the, and she had filed a lawsuit against Hughes Aircraft for unlawful firing, but that brought up the case of her technical issues. And Paul Wolfowitz just wrote the memo to the judge, this thing cannot go forward, it will compromise national security. There was nothing like that. We hadn't invented anything by then, but everything was stamped secret. So this is the Manhattan Project. You go back to that, is when all of this started, with the black programs, with the special clearances and things like that. And it just continues on 80 years hence. And this is why the so-called deep state and the military-industrial complex are so concerned about possible peace in Europe. And as your guest previously, the professor from Warwick, said, that Donald Trump kind of shredded this whole paradigm, this framework, and once this goes, so many people's lives are going to be upended.
Professor Subrata Ghosh Roy, thank you. We invite all these rich contractors who make all the money on, and of course, the professor at Warwick was Lord Skidelsky, who is on Going Underground. People can watch that on Rumble. Thank you, Professor.
Welcome. My pleasure.
That's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday for the final show of this season with James Galbraith, son of FDR Truman Kennedy, and Johnson advisor John Kenneth Galbraith, who claims the supply-demand curve in every economics textbook is fatally flawed. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.